Is everything cool?
No, I think your new GTX 280 is picking it up.
I don't know what you're talking about. Other than having to buy a new power supply just to use it.
They are power hungry, aren't they?
Yeah, and the power supply that I got, I just twittered it. It's too deep for my case, so it kind of hangs out the back a little bit. So I guess I know what I'm buying next.
Is that the equivalent of, like, a woman or man, like, having jeans that don't completely fit them and stuff hangs out the back?
Ahoy, and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast number 165. I'm Previews Editor Evan Lottie, and I'm joined Voltron style by the Mecha Space Tiger known as PC Gamers Reviews Editor Dan Stapleton.
I did not consent to merging with your torso.
No, you're this actually...
This was not cleared with me in advance.
No, like, you can be the sword if you want, or you can kind of join with my hip. I don't know if that's more attractive.
No sale.
Okay. Andy Salisbury might be up for it. He's a Maximum PC's blogger.
Hey-o!
Or one of their bloggers, at least.
Yeah, well, one of many.
One of many, of course.
Well, it's a very exclusive club.
Also attaching to my frame is esteemed podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Hey, it's even more an exclusive club to be the podcast producer.
That's right.
A club of one.
And my personally preferred Red Alert 3 co-commander, Josh Augustine.
Ahoy. And glad I'm not merging with you.
Thanks. But you will eventually. It's part of the process.
It's inevitable.
That's right. How's Thursday?
Evan has Borg-like assimilation plans.
Absolutely. How's Thursday treating everybody?
Wonderful.
So far better than Wednesday.
It's unbelievably sunny up here. Like, it's a really beautiful day out. I'm happy I got a chance to go run.
I'm struggling with some Peggle challenges, but other than that, beautiful.
Great. Yes. Yeah, Dan, I'm glad you made it to work safe and sound today.
My car got towed yesterday.
Oh, yep. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah. By the way, in the Lost in the Damned little expansion pack for GTA on Xbox, there are tow trucks that you can blow up.
Good.
So.
Yeah, I'm looking for some virtual revenge. These guys are lucky that I have video games as an outlet for my violent impulses.
Oh boy.
It wasn't me, right. Dan. It wasn't me.
That's reassuring news. I'm trying to figure out if that's going to actually come to PC as well. We've had a couple questions about that.
It hasn't
been exclusive.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced, but I'm hoping it'll be along the same lines of the Fallout DLC, but
I remember hearing something along the lines of Microsoft having the rights for two expansions for GTA 4 exclusive to Xbox. I'm not sure if Lost in the Damned is one of those, but...
Right, but I mean, like, the Fallout DLC is also Microsoft exclusive, but it's also coming out on PC because Microsoft owns Windows and Games for Windows Live. So,
yeah, but I didn't really think Games for Windows Live was catching on too strong, so I'm not sure if they're really going to make that push.
Well, I mean, they may. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, they didn't actually announce that GTA 4 was coming out for the PC at all until shortly before it did.
Yeah, that's true.
It could be that they're just going to wait until they get around to actually porting it or get close to being done with porting it before they announce it.
Yeah, and I mean, logically, it kind of makes sense. Since we got the game a little later, it makes sense. We've had less time with it leading up to the DLC, so we can wait. It's cool. So some super interesting news as Valve kind of continues its trend of releasing information about its sales this year and late last year. So Left 4 Dead was 50% off. There was a 50% off in the game sale last weekend. It was $25. You could pick it up if you did, and many people did, apparently. Gabe Newell at the DICE Developer Summit in Las Vegas this week at a keynote speech announced that Left 4 Dead saw a 3,000% increase in sales for that weekend. I don't know if that number is compared to the previous weekend. I'm assuming that that's kind of what it represents, but... And I'm not sure if it represents revenue or title sales itself in terms of units sold, but either way, that's a massive, massive increase.
Valve to me is really interesting because like they're not a public company, so they're not obligated to post any kind of like public earnings report or anything like that. So it's difficult to tell what exactly is going on there, how well they're doing. I mean, obviously they're doing really well, but we have no idea exactly how well they're doing as opposed to like EA, which, you know, puts out their earnings statements and we can see how much they gained or lost in a year. But Valve, like when they have, you know, great news like this, they come out and tell you all about it, which is, you know, more than EA. They go into more detail than EA does because you have to kind of, you know, dig through their earnings reports and figure out what did really well if you really want to know. But Valve will come out and tell you. It's very, you know, it shines a lot of light on it when they do.
Was this sale only on the retail? I mean, Steam, or did it actually have retail shelf sales too?
No, it was a Steam sale.
It was a Steam sale.
Only, yeah. And they mentioned that new Steam customers jumped 1,600% over the same weekend as well. So
wow.
Indicating that there's a lot of new Steam users attached onto that that sale.
So 1,600% more joined than the week prior to that.
That's what's inferred. It didn't say it directly. That's the only problem. I contacted their PR today about it and haven't gotten a response yet to clarify. But
that's really the only way it could be. I mean, there's no way that they increased their signups in general by 1,600.
Right. Yeah. That's got to be the case.
Of course.
Yeah.
Let me put this out there because I think maybe a lot of people thought Left 4 Dead was a little bit overpriced. So maybe the reason why it jumped so high in the sales figures is because now with 50% off, people are like, well, I'll take that jump. Whereas before, they weren't comfortable paying the $50 for only four maps or, you know, whatever the sort of zeitgeist thought of it was. So maybe this wouldn't happen with every single game, but Left 4 Dead was a special case.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. I think that not every game would see this kind of jump if it was sold at half price.
Yeah.
And what was the really interesting thing about this is they didn't just move more inventory, they saw a bump up in profits as well. So it's not, when they set the prices, they're always trying to find the sweet spot between how many people are going to buy it versus, you know, how much can they make up for lost sales by jacking up the price a little bit. So the $50 price point has been that sweet spot for a long time. But they may, I mean, like if Valve thinks that they've found a better sweet spot, then that might change.
Yeah, I think the most shocking piece of news from this is that the overall sales from that weekend beat the launch sales of Left 4 Dead.
Whoa, for real? Is this just on PC, or does that count everything?
It's got to be on PC because they're not selling it on Xbox on Steam.
It might be the launch Steam sold copies versus last weekend's Steam sold copies. But either way, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, talking about price points, we just got off the phone with Michael Pachter, who's an industry analyst on the OXM podcast, and he was saying 60 is you won't see games get cheaper, he was saying. You'll only see games maybe get expensive, more expensive.
But that's on the Xbox, though, where they're
paying. That's true. And I was like, I don't say anything, and I was just thinking, well, yeah, like PC games are already cheaper than that. They're $50. And if this is any indication, maybe they'll go down over digital distribution stuff since you don't have to pay for boxes and plastic and stuff,
Yeah, just broadening this topic a little bit, they listed some numbers from that big holiday sale where they're cutting prices on a lot of different titles like Peggle, and I think Bioshock was one of them, and a few others. And they sort of listed these numbers that over that holiday sale period, like a 25% sale, like 25% off the price of the game, resulted in a 245% increase in sales, 50% equated to 320% increase in sales, 75% sale equated to a 1,470% increase in sales. So, I mean, I kind of interpret this as Valve putting out some good marketing for people that haven't jumped on the Steam bandwagon yet in terms of publishers. Like, look how successful cutting the prices of your games can be. Like, you're going to sell this many more units, you're going to sell more than you would over this period of time if it was full price that whole time.
And not just sell more, but enough more that you're making more money as a result of it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of a nice bit of marketing and a nice tactic on their end, I think. But it also really shows the advantage of having a platform where you can control. I mean, not control the total cost of the game at all times, because we had this discussion earlier, Dan and I and Gary, that they're sort of beholden to their retailers where they can't undersell that price on Steam. But they can do these sort of like brief sales and promotional things and control that within the context of their own platform. That's really a powerful device, I think, in terms of sort of the old model where developers and publishers would, you know, have to build up marketing and fight for retail space over a period of, you know, maybe a month or two, you know, prime retail space on shelves. So,
yeah, I think that like the what we were talking about earlier was that the retailers still have a large amount of sway over publishers. The publishers can't go to Steam and say you can sell this for $25, but we're going to charge people $50 for it at retail because retail says, you know, that's not, we're not going to sell any of this. It's hurting our image, so, you know, we're just not going to carry it. And they still want, the publishers still want retail presence because, you know, at this point, it's probably not yet even 50% of the game sales happening over digital distribution. So they can't you know, just to tell the retailers are going to do whatever they want yet. But, you know, a few more years and they might just be able to reach a tipping point where the retail sales are, you know, where the digital sales were just a couple years ago, just kind of an extra little piece. At which point they'll be able to say, hey, you know, we're going to sell it online for cheaper, make more money than we would have putting it in the retail stores. I think that will be a great day for PC gaming.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's just helpful to have this kind of information and see some of the success of trying different methods for selling games. So we'll continue to keep our eye on it. So in the past week or so, there's some interesting things happening in the MMO space, and that means this is kind of the part of the podcast where I spin point to Josh Augustine, like a lead guitarist, and he does a little drum solo about dwarves and raids and things like that because I'm not as familiar with them. So take it away, Josh.
All right. I'll be calling on Andy Salisbury to help me hit some cymbals on this one.
I would love to.
All right. First one, Guild Wars 2, there's a big kind of rumor going around that is being delayed to 2010 or 11, and people started really freaking out. NCSoft came out and, you know, was just clarifying, you know, there was a date, like, listed on a report somewhere deep inside one of their files, and it was just listed because they haven't set a release date, but they needed to put something, so they just put something, and they said, like Blizzard always says, you know, it's done when it's done. And so, yeah, so that'll be coming out not anytime soon, it sounds like, but 2010, 2011 might be a bit far off.
Yeah, I mean, they never gave a release date for that at all. So, you know, to freak out that it's been delayed is a little bit odd. You can't delay what has not, you know, had a date set, which is why so few developers set concrete, you know, dates anymore. They don't want to miss them and get the, you know, the bad image from that. But it was actually somebody from ArenaNet who came out and set the record straight after the NCSoft report showed that it, you know, could come out in 2010 or 2011, and said, hey, hold on, you know, there's no delay. It's just not, you know, we never gave you a date.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just people that, you know, like to think it's coming sooner, even though they haven't necessarily been promised that, and then...
They didn't say it wouldn't come out in early 2009.
Exactly. And so, yeah, that's about it. I mean, that's really no news, basically, there, is just people freaking out about nothing for a little bit. And but Warhammer, as we talked about kind of last weekend or the week before, they're having the big update coming out with new careers and all this new stuff. They just put up public test realms. So if you're a big Warhammer fan, definitely sign up for the public test realms and download the service. You can get on there. I talked with Adam Gershwich at Mythic about the new careers, and he told me that they should be available for everyone to be try out by the end of this week or early next week. So if you're into Warhammer, definitely check that out because the new careers sound pretty awesome. Let us know what you think.
That's going to be like the Blizzard test servers where any progress you make on those is erased, right?
Right. That is true.
And that kind of kills the incentive for me. I mean, in an RPG, I mean, yeah, you get to jump in and try it out, you know, to see kind of what a taste of it is, but why would you play that for any longer than like an hour or two?
I mean, I think it's a situation Mythic is really in a position where they're seeing their subscriptions maybe dwindle a little bit, and they're really receptive for feedback. So if you're a person that likes to get involved in that and balancing and trying out Rays and giving a lot of feedback to the developer. So maybe it's an interesting opportunity in that case, but...
Oh, certainly, from that angle. But I mean, just for the average gamer who just wants to play the game and not
right.
and not you know muddle through potentially buggy stuff trying to get somewhere in the game, only to have that progress erased when it's actually finished and comes out. I just don't think that's for everybody. It's obviously a great service to the game and the game playing public. Who will play the final product, but it is kind of a selfless act, I guess.
Well, yeah. Sort of, but I mean, a lot of people want to see the new careers, kind of see what they're like, so they know, you know, hey, I want to start this as soon as it comes out, so maybe, you know, I won't invest as much time into this current character. Or they can try the career and be like, oh, I don't like this at all, so they know they're staying with their current character, so then they can go back on the live service and focus on that.
But the only difference really there is when they do it. They get to do it a little bit ahead of when it goes live.
Because well, yeah, I really like that.
I know,
in World of Warcraft with Test Realms, when there's a new raid coming out, you know, people will just flood out there because they and their guilds want to get out and get a jump on the new bosses, knowing full well all the gear that they get and all you know everything they're getting out of this raid experience on the Test Realm. They're just going to be able to take that experience and move it over, which I think is kind of the same idea with the class. Like, they're going to know exactly how to level them the fastest and everything like that when they finally do become live.
Which, I mean, to me, and, you know, again, this is just the way I like to play games. I mean, I don't like doing the same thing over and over again for no real benefit, you know, or even, I mean, there are a few benefits you can offer me for doing the same thing over and over again like that. You know, it seems to be, you know, not really in the spirit of the way I enjoy games, which is, you know, the initial experience of it is really what I play for. And any subsequent things is if it's, you know, really great, then I'll go back and play it some more. But like the attitude there seems to be figuring out ways to exploit it, you know, or not necessarily exploit in a way that breaks it, but trying to reduce it to a math problem, you know, and figure out how they can get absolutely everything out of it with the minimal effort when they go through it in the real time. It's kind of, yeah, I don't know. It's fine for people that want to do it. It's just not the way I play it.
That is fair enough. Yeah. I love min-maxing characters, so I'm definitely a kind of guy that likes to jump on the public test realms. I don't do the raids, but I love to jump on there and see new classes, try them out, see what they're like. Also, if you're into WoW, this is where Andy could probably talk a lot more about it. The 2009 Arena Tournament, just registration just opened. Are you? I know, Andy, you like dominated Arena last season. Do you have a team that's going to be doing this?
I actually, with work and school and everything, I have kind of cut myself off from PvP because I spend so much time in it. Like I was able to get Gladiator and do all that fun stuff, but it, you know, it ate up on top of raiding. Tons of time. So unfortunately, I haven't been as involved with the PvP community this time around. I do know a lot of people in my guild that are, but yeah, we don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah. The reason I like this tournament as opposed to any other like the MMO tournaments is anybody can do it. If you have a level 80, you can pay $20. It's a $20 entry fee. And then you get access to a special tournament server where you get all epic items. So, I mean, everyone's on the same playing field, and then it just goes through a tournament, and then there's prizes at the end. You can get in-game items, or I think there's like $200,000 worth of prizes.
Yeah. And then, too, the people that do really well in it are usually selected for the live events that happen, the live arena events that happen. They'll fly people out and, you know, compete on the LAN, which is pretty cool.
So I don't know how many players participated last year, but it's usually a pretty big event. And so I might try. I've got a Death Knight up at 80, and he's pretty crappy gear, but I'd be excited to. I'd pay $20 to do this. So then, you know, you get full epic gear, and you can go out there and just have some fun.
Yeah. I remember playing it when they were just testing it before it was the $20 fee, and it was really cool to be out there in a level playing field with everybody and just, you know, to really break it down to just people's skill and reaction time.
Yeah, it's good fun. And speaking of WoW, big news this week was Jeff Kaplan, who along with Tom Chilton, has basically kind of been the two, I'm not even sure they're actual titles, but they're like the two heads of development, basically, of World of Warcraft since the launch. He's leaving WoW to work on Blizzard's next unannounced MMO. And so I was curious just what do you think he's working on? What do you think that MMO is going to be?
It kind of has to be StarCraft, I think.
No. No. Please don't.
I would bet solid money that it is anything but StarCraft.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah. Right after StarCraft II, sci-fi MMOs have never done well. I think following StarCraft II, I don't think so soon. My money is on a brand new IP.
First of all, it's not going to be that soon. You know, StarCraft II will almost certainly be out this year. The unannounced MMO, I mean, they haven't even announced it yet. They probably won't announce it until next year. If you follow the pattern that they followed with Warcraft, they put out Warcraft III followed by World of Warcraft. So what they may be doing is trying to repeat that, introducing a bunch of new characters in the single player campaign of the Warcraft II or the StarCraft II now trilogy, that would then allow them to build upon that for to expand the universe a little bit and build upon that in a StarCraft Online.
I don't know if I'd call one instance a pattern.
Well, it is a pattern that you can follow again. It is a sequence of events that can be reproduced.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I just don't get that vibe because I know that they were working on something brand new, and I want to think that it has something to do with that because, you know, they certainly have the MMO thing down, and it'd be really fun to see them take on a new. I think mostly just part of me wants to believe that it's the new thing because, as much as I like the pre-existing Blizzard universes, I just am really excited to see what they'll do next.
I just want to see them make a new IP. I think something out of the fantasy and sci-fi realm, it would be interesting. I think the last thing they did was Blackthorn on Macintosh, and then obviously I guess it could be the Lost Vikings MMO. That'd be interesting, I guess.
Yeah, but here's another thing to think about. If they wanted to do another fantasy MMO, they would just be cannibalizing WoW. So they don't, that's something they would not want to do because WoW has legs on it. It's going to be around for years and years. If they put out another fantasy MMO, they will take a large portion of their own audience.
I don't know. I don't know if WoW's going to be around for years and years because the MMO cycle just isn't. I think it's usually, what, 5 or 6 years or something?
Dude, EverQuest is still around.
It's not really. I mean, World of Warcraft will always be around.
It's not relevant.
It won't be the main thing. Yes,
it's still around. It's still making money.
It is, and WoW will be around making money, but I think my guess would be 2.5 years, the MMO's out or so. And they'll provide huge incentives to move from WoW to their new MMO. And they'll do everything to push you over there. And they'll leave Warcraft running because people will want to do it. But people just get sick of it after a while.
Right. And they get sick of the setting as well. You spent the last 4 years in a fantasy MMO. Why would you want to go straight into another fantasy MMO where everything is, you know, more goblins and elves?
Oh, it won't. No, I agree. I don't think it'll be a fantasy MMO at all. I just think it'll be a new IP. I'd go with steampunk. That's my off-the-wall guess right there.
But so imagine you're in Blizzard's position here. You have the option to launch an MMO based on a wildly popular franchise that has just been reinvigorated by a major RTS, or you can start from the ground up and have nothing to stand on. I mean, no extended universe already.
Yeah, well, I think anything Blizzard does definitely has something to stand on just because it's Blizzard. And
but besides that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to do a StarCraft MMO. I would love to see them do a new IP, so I hope it's not. And it just seems tired. It seems kind of lazy if they just keep using Warcraft and StarCraft over and over again.
They've only used Warcraft or StarCraft once so far, and they're about to use it for a second time. I mean, it's hardly an exhausted IP.
Well, to do two games within like 2 years of another right after on the same one, and then Warcraft, you know, three in a row. So
they did it with Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft, and it worked like magic.
Can't deny you that. I just think I would love to see new IP.
Do you think we'll see another expansion pack within the next year and a half for World of Warcraft?
Certainly.
Yeah.
They would be insane not to. Why would they?
I wouldn't be surprised if they were turning away at it right this second.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it'll be their focus as they're working on StarCraft.
Blizzard has a lot of people, you know,
and they're
hiring more apparently. So I don't think they're going to be wanting for resources. I don't think that's going to be their issue. I guess the only question would be, you know, now that like the head honcho of StarCraft has moved on to something else, is the guy that moves into his place going to be as good, or could he even be better? You don't know. Gotta wait and see.
What if it's a Guitar Hero MMO? Because they are owned by Activision.
Hey, you know, Activision did say that they're going to be releasing twice as many SKUs as last year in music games, so...
Oh, my gosh.
It's possible.
Hey.
Guitar Hero everything. It's just sickening to me.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they're going to do. I go out on a limb and say that's not what... The only other possibility in my mind for them doing an MMO would be Diablo 3. But I don't think that's the way they're going to go, or a Diablo Online. But I think like I said, that's too close to World of Warcraft.
Indeed, yeah. I like your idea of steampunk though, Josh. That would be a good one. Fallout's kind of competing for that space with Interplay developing
that too,
right?
Steampunk.
Well,
it is not steampunk.
Post-apocalyptic things.
Bit of the weapons kind of look steampunk.
The rocket launcher maybe. Like the homemade stuff, maybe a little bit, but it's not steampunk. It's homemade stuff. That's very different.
I mean, it's certainly not like 18th century steampunk. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. Okay, moving on. Just a quick reminder that Warhammer 40,000 Dawn of War 2 is available on Steam, and I believe in retail starting today.
Well, let's try that again with some enthusiasm, Evan.
Right. Hey, I've been looking forward to this game a long time. I know you've already played all the way through it. You said you play co-op with me.
Yeah, but you just said it's out and you know it sounds like you're gonna sleep through it. Come on, let's try that again with feeling. Come on.
Did you see the guy in the comments talking about how it sounds like we're all terribly bored to be here?
That's actually just how Evan talks. That's
pretty much. It's true, actually. No, I'm really psyched. I mean, okay, I'm gonna put this in context. Red Alert 3 for me has been what. Sort of the similar experience of TF2 has been in that it integrates this non-serious approach. There's a layer of comedy. There's nonsense and just these crazy over-the-top units in Red Alert 3. And in that way, it like extracts all this pressure and like need to be perfect. And I just have fun playing 3-on-3 multiplayer and co-op and everything. So I'm newly excited about RTS games again. I'm excited about playing with Space Marines. I mean, mostly the single-player campaign. I'm not as enthusiastic about the multiplayer in Dawn of War 2, but I think Space Marines are some of the best, like, action figure characters just to point around and point guns at things. Like, they're just such cool characters, so I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, we just got it off of Steam today, so I'm interested in jumping back in to play it because they put out a patch, a zero-day patch that changed a couple things from when I last played it, which is kind of annoying, but... But also great, you know, good for the game that they're improving it.
Yeah, it's a big patch. It's a day zero patch, so Dawn of War 2 uses Steam as its DRM, so you do have to install Steam, whether or not you like that, in order to play the game. And let's see, the patch notes, which I have right here, mostly balancing stuff and some stability stuff, but...
Yeah, it's all stuff they gleaned from the multiplayer beta, which is, you know, the whole point of a multiplayer beta, so that the final product is improved when they finally... push it out.
Yeah, good for them. It's a this just a quick word count is 1,750 words for the patch. So well done, Relic. All right, the other big looming update that we're all anticipating is the scout update for Team Fortress 2. Yeah, it'll be released next Tuesday in full form. They're sort of teasing all the content updates as they usually do on the website on teamfortress.com/scout update. And the two announcements so far, I'm going to continue to F5 and hope that the third one comes up sometime during this podcast. The two announcements so far have been one unlockable weapon, which is the Sandman, which adds this new mechanic to the game, apparently, which is to stun other characters for a few seconds. It's basically this baseball bat that the scout holds, and he swings, and a ball goes flying out, and if you hit a character, depending on how far you hit the ball, the longer your enemy will be stunned, I guess. And it even has the capability to stun Uber charges, which is a pretty big defense on paper.
So wait a minute. It's a bat that fires a ball. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like he's tossing a ball up in the air and hitting it at somebody.
Yeah, we haven't seen the animation. I don't even know if it's ammo-based or if there's infinite ammo or what the range is or if it fires an arc or a straight line. Those are kind of the big questions right now, but it's curious to me. I mean, the downside to it is it takes away the scout's ability to double jump, which is... really big part of his mobility, but kind of gives the scout a defensive, more defensive disposition, I think.
It certainly gives him a strong defensive role against Ubers.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you know how long it'll stun somebody for?
It really didn't mention, but I've got to think that since it's dependent on the range that you fire it at, it'll be longer, that it's at least long enough for you to get in the melee range with the person that you hit with it. That's interesting. They also announced two community maps that they're adding, an arena map and a capture point map. The last update, which was the heavy update, added a payload map, I believe, so it was kind of expected. We're also kind of expecting a new game mode. Really have no idea what that would be. I don't know if you guys have any speculation on that, but they added arena mode last time, which is kind of fun, but isn't as popular as we thought it would be.
Well, and who cares if it really if it's all that popular, but just the fact that they're adding new stuff and adding new choices, that's something to be impressed by, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's in total been 63 or 64 patches to Team Fortress 2 since it released, so that's almost one every week, I think, if you count them up.
Yeah, they're on top of it.
Have they said if they're going to do updates for each of the classes?
Yes, and a lot of people already know this, but it was kind of teased in Left 4 Dead. There was an Easter egg where there was this kind of cereal box, like collect all the Team Fortress 2 action figures, but it said 10, and there's currently 9 classes. And I read in our sister magazine, PC Gamer UK, that they'll only add the 10th class once they've updated all the other the existing 9 classes. And I calculated last week that at the current rate they're going, keeping in mind that they had a huge delay for Left 4 Dead and the last update was in August, we can expect to have all those classes updated by summer of 2010-ish, which is kind of a long time. But, I mean, people play multiplayer games for a long time, especially Valve multiplayer games, apparently. So
that's true. I love Left 4 Dead, but Team Fortress 2 is always the sort of multiplayer game I love going back to. It feels more casual that you can just kind of jump in, play for 10 minutes, and jump out, which I like.
Kaboom! 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 Kaboom!
All right, so I pinged you guys about games that we're looking forward to this year, and I asked you to put together a kind of a small list of three that you're either really excited to get your hands on or just excited to hear some more information about. There's a few big ones that have been announced but don't really have any clarity on them. So
can I go first so that when everybody else gives theirs, it sounds like they're copying me?
Of course you can, Dan. You deserve it.
How dare you say StarCraft 2?
StarCraft 2.
No.
Also Dragon Age, and I'm going to say Star Trek Online.
Awesome. Is there anything in particular that you're skeptical on, or?
Star Trek Online, I think, is going to be hit or miss. I'm hoping for a hit. But, we have not yet seen enough of it for me to make a call one way or the other. I like that the starship combat, I'm worried, might be a little bit too like arcadey and treating the starships more like fighters than the starships. And also some of the starship customization stuff seems like it'll allow a bunch of people to make a bunch of really ugly starships, and in addition to some very cool ones. But yeah, those are my only concerns.
That seems reasonable. I mean, I'd like to think they would understand that the idea of a battleship, kind of this slow-moving vehicle that has to rotate and position itself, and it can evade but has to do so sort of slowly and thoughtfully, lends itself to sort of that traditional MMO, like hotbarring abilities and cooldown times and things like that for engines and repair systems. But
right, but there's also, in later Star Trek, there's been, the Defiant, which is very maneuverable. Like on Voyager, they like to treat that thing like an uber super duper ship that blows up Borg cubes. So does barrel rolls and all kinds of crazy crap. But And I've always been more of a fan of like the big lumbering ships that bring their cannons to bear as they turn. That's much more interesting combat to me. It's less dogfighting and more, leave the dogfighting for Star Wars is what I'm saying.
Yeah, certainly. It has opportunity to be more strategic, I think. All right, Andy Bauman, how about yourself? Anything in particular you're really looking forward to this year?
One game I want more.
I'm allowed to copy me.
Oh well, okay. So one game, one game that I want more information on is that Metro like 2033 or something like that. I don't know if the number's right, but it's that like.
Yep, that's it.
It's like a Russian game that you guys had in your issue, and it made by some of the guys who worked on the original Stalker, and I think it's just something about foreign games that. Foreign PC games from that part of the world that just get me really excited because everyone over there just everyone over there wants to make Fallout, like that guy said, and so you know, Stalker actually had a lot of Fallout-esque stuff, I felt, and I think this game will be really cool looking. It's got like a really original setting where you're going through crazy like abandoned metro tunnels where there's monsters, and yeah, I don't know, I think it'll be cool. And then of course StarCraft 2, because I was in love with StarCraft 1.
Yeah, Metro. I've seen a little bit of it.
You've oh, Dragon Age, of course. But
there
yeah.
you go. Awesome.
Rip off.
Yeah.
Yeah, Metro. You're seeing the BioShock label applied to it a lot, which is kind of accurate. I like the weapon system. They're kind of like homemade weapons in the sense of kind of along the lines of Fallout or BioShock, I guess, but the animations are super, super cool. There's sort of this shotgun that has like a rotating clip that you can either replace the whole clip at once or replace one bullet at a time if you're in a pinch and things like that. So the engine definitely looks nice. So be keeping my eye on that myself too. Andy Salisbury.
Go. I am looking forward to, I've mentioned this before, Modern Warfare 2. And as Dan mentioned, and I'm not copying, StarCraft 2, and I'm going to say / Diablo 3 just because they're both Blizzard IPs, and to be sneaky and sneak in another one even, I'm going to go with Rage just because it looks really cool to me. Like, I can't figure out what it's even about, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's an id game after id has hopefully learned a few lessons out of... you know, out of the reception of Doom 3 and the criticism of the monster closet mechanic.
Yeah, fingers crossed that it's not just boo.
Yeah,
throughout the entire process, but it looks.
I think they'll probably have learned something.
Yeah,
I'm really curious about how much emphasis they're going to put on actual racing in that game. It seems like it's something of a focus, but
is it actual racing or is it just driving around shooting?
Yeah,
stuff?
Exactly. Like the trailer that they showed, the first one, that's kind of seemed more like a tech trailer, but it kind of implied that there's this racing circuit. Of, you know, I don't know.
Nobody knows.
Proportions. We'll see. Anything you're hating on or totally not convinced about, Andy?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I mean, there's a lot of really fun-looking titles, but none that I've really wanted to take the time out of my day to think, like, no, about, you know? I haven't really spent that bit of power on it.
Just on the StarCraft 2 news thing, I just saw some screenshots online of some revisions to the Zerg art. They've done a new pass on like the Zerg drone, the Overlord, the Hydralisk, and the Overseer. Oh, and the Baneling, and they seem to be taking like a little bit more of a more realistic approach and less cartoony, but also significantly more detailed. And they've added like some shiny slime effects. They have a lot of side by side comparisons, and the difference is pretty dramatic.
Where'd you see that at?
I saw it on Voodoo Extreme.
Gotta go check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, they had a little promotion about 3 weeks ago, I think. Oh man, the Team Fortress 2 thing just got updated. Extra, extra. I've been waiting to say that. Okay, this
just in.
Yeah, literally, I just refreshed. So the next unlockable is an energy drink. If you go to teamfortress.com/scoutupdate, you'll see it. It's the third listing there. I'm going to just read this verbatim, I guess. So it's called the Bonk Energy Drink, and it says, running rings around all them molasses-slow dummies out there in the battlefield is thirsty frickin' work. So it's not, they're not really stating explicitly what the energy drink does, but it really implies that you're getting like this energy boost of a few seconds. It says the drink is radioactive, so that might cause you damage or something. And it says the energy is so powerful you'll be dodging bullets like they aren't even there, so it's probably making the scout even faster or something along those lines.
Certainly sounds like it.
Yeah, which is an interesting decision to make the fastest class faster. But
I wonder if it has like a drawback, like after you're fast, maybe you go half speed for like 10 seconds after or something.
Or maybe your heart explodes.
Yeah, that's kind of what it mentions actually, Josh. After the beneficial effects of the radiation wear off, drinkers have reported experiencing feelings of lethargy that can last several seconds, probably just like a real energy drink, I guess. So maybe he's slower, or he's stunned for a few seconds, maybe. We'll see, I guess. Basically, the scout is getting two utility items instead of any actual weapons that deal more or different damage. I mean, the bat probably does melee damage, but it's not really based in improved critical chance or anything like that. So it's interesting that they're giving the class two sort of non-combat items.
Yeah, yep. on the picture, it says, you know, miss over his head. So maybe it doesn't make you faster. Maybe you just don't get hit by bullets for a certain amount of time.
Sounds like a little Uber burst almost. Maybe it just reduces the chance you'll get hit.
It's possible. There's like a red streak behind him. It kind of looks like a different particle effect that makes him faster. I don't know. There's also the achievement list there. I won't read them off, but a lot of them are baseball themed, of course. All right, so forgive that interruption, that breaking news.
How dare you?
It's a rare opportunity that we get to actually present breaking news on the podcast. So
that's true.
Yeah. We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast programming.
Yes. Josh, what are you looking forward to this year? What's your top three?
Dragon Age Origins, just because everyone else is saying it, might as well.
All the cool kids.
Yeah. Death. I don't know if it's coming out this year. I don't think so. Deathspank by Ron Gilbert?
Yeah, that one's kind of unclear.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking forward to that one, though. If nothing else, I'd like new information this year. I'd love to see some gameplay video. And the Agency, I was really intrigued by. They're going to have cell phone integration. I'm really interested to see how in-depth that goes.
Yeah, that idea has zero appeal to me. To be bugged by a game on my phone, no.
Yeah, it's fair enough. It's not for everybody, but I think it would provide an extra level of immersion for people that are looking for that. I think it's really interesting.
I mean, you don't think so, Dan? I know you just got an iPhone. It would give you an opportunity to sort of role play like Jack Bauer every day. Like, you get these updates that your agency is being attacked or being
right,
bombed or something.
So I'm at work and I get a text message saying your agency is being attacked. Then you're sitting there going, oh crap, my agency is being attacked. And what do I do? Take a day off work?
And no, it's
obviously
it's two way. So it'll say, you know, reply one if you want to save your buddy, or two if you're just going to let him die, or if you don't reply, it'll wait until you log on to continue with it.
Yeah, I don't know. No appeal.
Fair enough. I'm
really deem this idea terrible.
Well, this is my list, Dan. You had your three list earlier.
I'm telling you, your list is terrible, Josh.
No. Well, you're going to hate the second part of my list, too, because although it's not a game that I hate, I have not really gotten excited about StarCraft II. I haven't read up anything on it. I'm sure I'll play it when it comes out. I'm just not super excited about it.
I think that given your affinity for Red Alert 3, I think you'll like it. Red Alert has a lot of things in common. I mean, the ability, the use of abilities, the fast paced gameplay, the asymmetrical sides. It is of the same vein.
Well, I love the original StarCraft.
Well, then there's no reason to think you won't love this one.
I know. I'm sure I'm going to love it. I'm not excited about it. I haven't read any of the stuff online. Like, my brother loves StarCraft, so he keeps, you know, oh, did you see the new Zerg update? Like, it just doesn't interest me. I'll play it when it comes out, but I'm not super excited about it.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea, just because with Blizzard games in particular, they take so long to actually come out. I mean, they put out a lot of information on them, but they take so long to come out that by the time it actually comes out, you're kind of burnt out on it almost. Or maybe your expectations get built up too much. So, you know, not really following a game like that when it doesn't have a definitive release date and you know, it may be further in the future than you would like. Not following it may be a better approach of managing that, your expectations.
Fire it up.
Fire it up? Is that Duke Nukem?
No, that was a fire bat.
Firebat.
Oh, Firebat? I couldn't understand it.
When that happened, I'm not even kidding, I was kind of at that point where I was just listening to the conversation and enjoying it, and I wasn't sure if I'd opened like a new tab where it was one of those obnoxious ads where it's like, congratulations, you're the winner, and I was just like searching around like, oh my god, what did I do?
Yeah, it was a little bit too fuzzy for me to catch it on the first go. I kind of thought it was Duke too. Andy, was that you? Were you responsible for that?
Yeah.
No. Well, I called it out. I didn't do it.
It was Andy.
The other Andy.
Yeah.
It's always Andy Bauman.
Anywho.
You can't see me, but I'm shaking my fist right now.
As for my own Trinity, which coincidentally has none of the games you guys mentioned, Red Alert Uprising coming out in March, because I really want some new multiplayer maps that are officially made for Red Alert 3. I mean, we play so much 6-on-6 usually, and five-person free-for-all that there's really only two or three maps that we play, and just want something new. I want something urban, hopefully, that can play around with.
Now, just hold on a second. Are you certain that that there are going to be new multiplayer maps in Uprising?
That's what I'm recalling from what they told us. Yeah,
okay,
I'm pretty sure.
Because I know it's a very single player focused game. There's none of the new units in that are going to be available in multiplayer. None of the it's not even going to have co-op in the campaign. It's very single player focused. So yeah. I'm just not certain that there are going to be new multiplayer maps.
Very possible that you're correct. I will double check.
You ought to look into some community made maps. And in fact, I think I saw something recently about a random map generator.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, I downloaded it, but I haven't tried it yet. And it's just, I mean, I need to rant on this a little bit. The GameSpy service that Command Conquer 3 uses to connect people with for multiplayer is freaking awful, and it doesn't work half the time. And you literally spend more time setting up a game than you do playing one, because the games only last about 25 or 30 minutes if you're being generous and being kind of casual.
Well, are you talking about a 6v6 game, or a 3v3 game, or just a 1v1 game?
If you're trying to get 4 or 5 or 6 people into a game, a third of them won't be able to connect. You have to keep inviting. They have to reset their game 2 or 3 times. It's just so hit or miss, and there's no obvious... It's just... And it's widespread. A lot of people have the issue. Anyway, I hope they fix that. Actually...
That kind of thing is not entirely uncommon in RTS games. It happens a lot. I mean, games like... I guess StarCraft kind of worked out most of their problems, but other than that, I've never seen an RTS game that will really reliably set up a six-player game. Like the majority of the time, even, and have everybody be able to connect, because everybody's behind firewalls and all kinds of junk like that, and it makes it really hard. So
it'd just be really nice if they had one or two dedicated servers we could play on. It's all host based, and even if your ping is really good, somebody lags, and
right.
I don't know. Anyway, it's funny, they actually did release their 1.07 patch for that today. It's a few balancing changes, nothing major, I think. I think it's kind of funny they released it on the same day that Dawn of War 2 comes out. Probably not a coincidence. So my second game, Batman Arkham Asylum. I know it's sort of console-focused, but I've seen enough of that that I'm really intrigued. We're actually going to have an interview with the writer, Paul Denis, who actually worked on Batman, the animated series, and a lot of pretty solid Batman comics in his lifetime. Really reassuring to hear that they have Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill on board for voice acting, and it's looking very good in terms of the art direction, and even the gameplay a little bit looks promising.
And they've also got the voice actress who did Harlequin, right? Or Harley Quinn.
That's correct.
From the animated series. Yeah.
That's awesome. Correct. Yeah, I wish I know a few more of the bosses that are going to be announced. I wish I could mention them to you guys, but they're solid choices. That's all I can say. Sort of my dark horse for 2009. You'll see it in our April issue, actually, that's just going out to subscribers this week and next week. It's a game called Global Agenda from Hi-Rez Studios in Georgia. And I'll just sum it up by saying that it's a Tribes MMO, basically, with a lot of Team Fortress 2-like mechanics.
Yeah, that one is a very interesting story, how it actually got to, like, you know, off the ground development-wise, because it's funded by just a lone investor who's a big gamer who made his fortune and decided to spend a bunch of it on making a game because he loves games.
Yeah, a guy named Erez Goren. He's like a self-made millionaire programmer, and he's put in more than $20 million just to make this project. He said to me personally when I interviewed him and went to the studio to play it that, like, he doesn't know if this is going to make money. Like, either way, he's got to spend his money somewhere. This, you know, he might as well make a game that's fun and interesting to him and get to play with it and whatnot. And it's really exciting. I had a good time with it, and the guys put in more than 100 hours into each Team Fortress class, and it really shows in a lot of the mechanics of the game. So, and sort of my game that I'm not too keen on so far, based on what I've seen, is Deus Ex 3. Definitely have high hopes for it, but from what we've seen in terms of imagery and information, I feel like they're making some compromises in terms of making it more of an action game than an RPG, and I obviously really want to see that franchise continue in its RPG roots, unlike Invisible War, which is kind of not that fun.
And it's kind of interesting that they would take an RPG-ish franchise like that and make it more action-y, considering that, you know, RPGs have been doing well lately. I mean, with Mass Effect and Fallout and what else is a big RPG lately that's been cross-platform? But basically, there have been a lot of success stories there.
Yeah.
With big names behind them. So you would think that they would say, oh, you know, let's make a Deus Ex RPG, you know, with, you know, action RPG, but keep the RPG elements, because it doesn't seem to be hurting anybody's sales.
That's for sure. And on top of that, you'd think they wouldn't necessarily want to compete in that space a little bit more. I mean, they haven't even started to really roll out marketing, so we'll see how they pitch it and if they make any big changes. But things like adding a cover system that's what they've described as akin to, what's the name of the game? Rainbow Six.
Okay.
Is not necessarily reassuring, but I don't want to judge it too ahead of time, I guess.
I like cover systems in games like that, honestly. I mean, the cover in general just seems like such a natural thing to want to use in a shooter. It's almost like shooters that don't have it are, you know, they're going for a specific style of gameplay, which is great, but they're not really shooting for any kind of, you know, what you would actually do in that situation. And, you know, it's kind of a suspension of disbelief thing, which is great, and I love that kind of gameplay as well, but it's not going for like a cinematic kind of feel that makes you kind of feel like much like a, you know, pseudo realistic action hero. Because most of the time, you know, action heroes are actually, you know, taking cover and shooting back at the bad guys. You know, the bad guys can't hit the broadside of a barn anyway, but the good guys are still, you know, taking cover just to humor them. But rather than just being out in the open, you know, shooting people right and left.
Indeed. All right. Well, thanks for sharing what you guys are looking forward to. Hopefully it generates some good discussion in our comments thread. Feel free to let us know what you guys are looking forward to or not really convinced on yet this year. Mr. Bauman, do you have any awesome listener questions that we can share and answer?
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Richard McFall from North Carolina. I had a question for you guys. I wanted to fill up your inbox. What is your favorite in-game movie or short film, I guess you would call it? One that, I guess, starts at the beginning of the movie or somewhere middle or end? I wish I had one, but I don't, because I'm stuck between several different ones, but I'd love to hear what you guys say about this. Love the podcast. Please keep them coming. Cheers.
The one that springs to mind for me is Company of Heroes, intro cinematic where they're making the D-Day landing. And what makes it so cool, I mean, we've all seen D-Day 100 times in, you know, Saving Private Ryan and every World War II game ever. But what makes it very cool is that they do a seamless transition from the movie to the game engine. And it's so good that, like, the first time through, you barely notice it. You kind of have to go back and watch it again just to see where the transition happens. And that was one of my favorites, just because it makes me appreciate how good the graphics in that game are, and really kind of revolutionarily so for an RTS.
Very nice. Yeah, that's definitely a memorable one. I have a hard time picking out specific ones. Definitely Fallout, or I can't remember if it was Fallout 1 or Fallout 2, I'm sorry, but the one that has the Maybe song, and it sort of zooms back from the television to show the landscape destroyed. I think that was really...
That's Fallout 1.
Fallout 1, yeah. I think that was really emotional and interesting. I mean, you definitely go back to... I mean, Red Alert 3, the original Red Alert, actually, is a pretty obvious choice with the Stalin B-movie actor and whatnot. I think,
and the intro cinematic of Red Alert 1 was very, very good too, with Einstein going back. Yeah, that was very well done.
Certainly, even the very small ones that are spaced between the missions and sort of bookend them, that show like carriers destroying stuff and Tesla coils and Jeeps and things like that. I have pretty fond memories of those, and I think most of the MechWarrior games had pretty strong intro cinematics too, if I remember correctly, kind of showing the heat of battle and Mad Cats and different mechs and atlases going at it.
I hate to continue along the path of the WoW nerd, but I'm not sure if Josh, if you've seen this, but in the midst of a quest chain in Wrath of the Lich King, there's a cinematic movie called The Wrathgate, and it's really cool because it further immerses you in the story, because the quests, as simple as they are, just reading the dialogue and everything, really gets you immersed in the World of Warcraft lore. And there's a point where you get a really great cinematic, you can watch it online, and even if you don't play World of Warcraft, it is really a lot of fun to watch because it is done, for the most part, I think almost entirely in the in-game engine. So it's worth checking out, even if you don't play WoW.
Pretty much every cinematic that Blizzard has ever done is really outstanding. They do They do some amazing work.
Even without the like amazing graphics too, like this one, just keeping everything in game and making you like not breaking that line, you know, between in game and these beautiful cinematics and just finding a nice middle ground, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and I really liked how, as far as I know, especially definitely in World of Warcraft, it's the first time like a cinematic was integrated into a quest line, which I thought was really interesting. It really did help immerse you. And then when you come out of the quest line, a lot of the world has changed. They use the phasing technology there. So yeah, it really is like a monumental moment.
Cool. One of the best videos I remember of recent memory is the Witcher opening video. He's like fighting against this thing called the Stygia. And it's just like a really well-made, well-directed video or a fight scene, and it really just gets you into the character and like how you can use all your different sword styles, speed styles, like heavy, slow, quick, whatever, and it just gets you like going right at the bat, and that game is phenomenal.
We actually had a couple more questions that pertain to what our favorite things were. I don't know if you can pull another one of those up for us, Andy.
Hey, PCG. This is Chris from North Lambeth, Massachusetts. I had a question for you guys. Well, the only thing I really love more than video gaming is music, and I've been a big fan of the video game music scene for a long time. With, you know, websites like Overclock Remix or bands like Power Glove, it's really like an awesome time to be part of the scene. So I was just wondering if you guys had any music from a game that really stood out, or if you ever kind of checked out the video game music scene at all. It's pretty cool. All right, keep up the good work, guys. Bye-bye.
Homeworld and Supreme Commander.
Yes, I still have the Homeworld soundtrack in my car. I think the Adagio for Strings theme, which is actually an actual classic piece, not wasn't made for Homeworld or anything, is really well done, the way they recorded it. I like Mass Effect a lot, too. Jack Wall is probably my favorite game composer. In Mass Effect, I never experienced music in a way that reflects the environment so well. Like, there's such like a sci-fi Blade Runner mystique and mood to that music that it's really an accomplishment and achievement, I think.
Yeah, I have to mirror that sentiment. Like, when I first played Mass Effect, I was completely blown away by how well the music fit into and like sucked you into the game world, no matter what it was. Even if it's just like the map, like the star map music, it's just like some of the coolest music ever. And it like, it wasn't what I was expecting, you know, for a sci-fi game, even though it sort of fits into like a synthy sci-fi cliche, but not really, because it's different. And like, the cool thing about Jack Wall is I met him in a bunch of times. He was here for Video Games Live, the tour. He's like the conductor on that tour. I don't know if he is anymore, but he was last season. And I talked to him, and it was before Mass Effect had come out for the PC. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to play Mass Effect on the PC. Like, fun. Anyways, I never really got to tell him how awesome his music was because I hadn't played it yet, so I felt bad about that.
I feel bad because the first thing I do when I get into a game, I just always mute the music because it's not that I don't feel like giving it a chance, it's just that I'm always so used to listening to my own. Like, I'll always have, you know, Pandora running or something along those lines to keep me entertained. It's just always been like that. Like, on my Xbox, whenever I'm playing, I've been playing The Lost and Damned a lot lately, and I bought the software to be able to stream all the music off my G5, and I just listen to my music that way. Like, I've always been one to listen to my own music, no matter what I was doing.
What do you listen to during Warcraft?
Warcraft, I have my own mix of just alternative stuff that I'll usually listen to. Like, I'm probably gonna say a lot of bands that nobody knows I'm talking about. But a good amount of like Jax Mannequin and Ben Folds, and there's some Billy Joel in there, which is always fun. And
nobody's heard of him.
A lot of the Killers lately, which is cool. Well, but like Jax Mannequin, nobody knows of, and you know, Tokyo Police Club and the Toadies and stuff like that.
But that's how you know bands are cool, Andy.
Yeah, because nobody's heard of them.
Yeah. MMOs in particular, like that's the only time when I really play music in the background rather than listening to the game's music, because after you've put, you know, several dozen hours in, you know, you get pretty sick of the music. So
yeah, I find there's a lot of techno heads that just listen to the same like beats over and over for hours and hours, and it's cool, but I could never get into it.
Every time I hear Muse now, I think about City of Heroes. Yeah, because when I was playing that a lot, I was listening to their music a lot, and I just think about using the super jump ability, bouncing around the cities and
yeah, I've just been getting into their stuff actually. Funny you mention that. Yeah. Pandora's been serving me up a lot of Muse lately.
That's funny. I think the original Riddler deserves some mention here too. What's his name? Frank Klepacki.
The intro song.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, Hell March.
Hell March is a classic game for sure, and the other ones are kind of ambient and interesting too.
Hey there, PC Gamer. Tom here, also known as Frost. And I just have a quick question for you guys. I was wondering what your favorite game quote is from any PC game ever. Just what is your favorite line of dialogue or character quote that you've ever heard? Hoping to hear from you guys and keep up the good work.
Off the top of our heads, that's pretty tricky. And the one that stands out in recent memory, I won't do the ever thing because I don't, I'd have to spend some time to reflect and look inward. But my favorite one of recent, like the last year, would be in Red Alert 3 in the first few missions of the Soviet campaign. Evan and Josh, you've been playing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Yeah.
It's I don't even know if I should spoil it for people. I think I might encourage you to go out and play it yourself because it's a line you're not going to miss. It'll make you laugh.
Yeah, it's hard to pick out a specific one. In terms of what's memorable, I think War Never Changes by Fallout is kind of a nice tagline for the series that is really dramatic and impactful.
And spoken by Ron Perlman.
Hey, that always helps.
I would definitely go with, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but it have to be from Monkey Island. There were just so many classic one-liners in there. Some Guybrush Threepwood says, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not really something you kind of classify in your mind usually when playing games. And I don't know, my memory for quotes is terrible anyway, unless it's Simpsons quotes.
I mean, I guess, I don't know if this really counts. I have some fond memories of, it's like the 10th time I'm mentioning Red Alert, but the original Red Alert sort of catchphrases and unit sayings as you're pointing them around, especially Tanya. For the longest time, I thought the original Tanya was saying, "Shake a baby," when you like told her to put plant C4 on something. I don't know if
she's cold, not an au pair.
There's people out there that know exactly what I'm talking about and are laughing right now. Trust me. But like
she was saying, "Shake it, baby."
Shake it, comma baby. Yes, but it really sounds like it. And there's also the Allied spy that's like, for king and country and whatnot. It's kind of funny and memorable. That's all. I don't know. We can look up some and post in the comments thread. I'll take a look around, see what I can remember.
Another one of my favorite quotes would have to be from this past week when me and Evan dominated Frost, who just made that call in Red Alert 3 and he was complaining.
Ouch, that stings.
I told you don't touch that darn thing. Yeah.
All right, so that brings us to playlists. Josh, why don't you go first?
I've been playing a lot of Red Alert 3 co-op with Evan and doing verses with Frost and some of the other guys. And I've been playing a lot of WoW. I actually got into Naxxramas for the first time this past week, which I was excited about. It's the big raid in Wrath of the Lich King. And that was a lot of fun going through that. I went with my guild, who's done it before. So it was nice just riding along with them.
Sounds great. Sir Stapleton.
Let's see. Well, I jumped into Red Alert 3 last night to give you guys, see if I could get back in shape and give you guys a run for your money, but found that I was horribly out of practice. I've been playing End War I did the review for that just recently, and it's paced much differently and doing the voice command, so I'm having a little bit of trouble reacclimating myself to Red Alert 3 speeds, but give me a little while and I'll get back into it. Although I might sidetrack into some Dawn of War 2 first. I've also been playing some Fallout 3, which has still not relinquished its grip on me. Every time I you know, I can stop for a while and then I go back in to try something new. Like I, you know, went back to try Operation Anchorage, which was, you know, just so-so. But now I just want to keep playing. So I got to get off of that again. And by the time I do quit playing again, I'm sure the next piece of DLC will be out. It's coming out next month. So
it's frankly impressive. Like I think that the amount of time you put into Fallout 3, you're qualifying for like federal assistance for qualifying as a child or something.
Yeah, and it's dependent.
100, yeah, 100.
Although
hours,
right? I think rather Bethesda should be listing me as a dependent.
That might be more accurate for sure.
Although, I mean, in all fairness, I'm no Andy or Josh. I'm not a WoW player. It's different levels of addiction.
And yeah, Andy Salisbury, go for it.
I remember mentioning a while ago that I wasn't really that into Fallout 3, and I've finally really just sat down, put a couple hours aside, decided to swear off WoW for, you know, a few nights because we've really notched down our rating schedule, and I've been jumping headfirst into Fallout 3, and I finally see what everybody's talking about. I love it. Like, whenever I have free time, if I'm not, you know, downstairs, if I don't have friends hitting me up to play Grand Theft Auto 4 online and just mess around in Free City, I'm undoubtedly on Fallout 3. It's really a lot of fun.
What kind of character are you playing? Good or evil? And what weapons are you?
You know, I tried to be bad, and I just, like, I genuinely feel bad when I do mean things to all these characters. Like, I can't find myself doing it. And I've specialized a lot, to go back to that, I'm good. I'm good karma, and I've specialized a lot into small guns and sneaking, so I can just get massive crits on people without even seeing me coming.
Well, just to interrupt with some more breaking news here, it's gotten a press release from Electronic Arts. They are working with American McGee on an all-new Alice title. It says American McGee and EA reunite for the next chapter in EA's classic Alice franchise. Dun dun dun.
What fun. Alice was a lot of fun. I like that.
Yeah, and maybe silly, American, you know? McGee's finally going back to, you know, what he did right.
Yeah.
that one game he did right. So yeah, that should be interesting.
And it just better not have any butt stomping in it.
Yeah, no butt stomping by gnomes or whatever that was. That was a little disturbing.
That's great news. Thanks for sharing. Andy Bauman, guess you're next.
Lately I've just been playing Peggle Knights still. I'm making it my new goal to actually get through all the challenges, which is no small feat. So it's kind of like a hardcore thing to get through all those, I'll have you know. And then I just jumped back into Crysis, because after we were talking about it last week, I was like, I am going to see if Crysis is still like the coolest game ever made. but I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's still really fun. And so I don't know if I'll be able to get back into Far Cry 2. I don't know.
You know, I was just watching Logan benchmark a new video card. I think he was working on the GTX 285, and he was running Crysis's built-in benchmark utility on there. I never thought I'd see Crysis run that fast, but it was really, really, you know, moving along super smooth.
Yeah, and the thing I always notice about Crysis is it's not so much the graphical, like the way the graphics look, but it's how the graphics move, almost with the motion blurring and how like tightly integrated the bullet tracers are and everything like that. So,
Andy, do you think? I mean, do you get anything special if you complete all the challenges, like say a diamond encrusted unicorn head?
I don't know,
something along those lines.
I didn't get anything in the first game really, except for self satisfaction.
Don't you get like a diploma from Peggle University or something?
Well, that's what you get when you just play through the adventure.
I see.
But you might, I don't know. You get like a trophy.
Get
I think.
a doctorate in Peggle.
Yeah. You get the most satisfying feeling you've ever gotten in your life. Just kidding.
Maybe my life has just been more satisfying than yours. I don't know. But so far, not.
Several ways to respond to that. All right. I'll choose to respond to it by listing my playlist. I'm going to play a lot of Dawn of War over the next couple weeks. Looking forward to that. Also going to be playing a bit of Wanted. The game, whatever, yeah.
Can you curve bullets?
You do indeed curve bullets.
Don't you need like a Wii controller for that?
Does Morgan Freeman swear at you?
Damn, I hope so.
Don't ruin it. Read the review, folks.
That would boost the score.
I did want to mention that I watched the Max Payne movie on Blu-ray, and dear God, why did they make that movie the way they did? Like, I was trying to see the benefit of the doubt and say, like, okay, well, they kind of adapted the story in a way. But then I was like, no, no. The movie's not the game, there's hardly any gunfighting. There's like,
I should have been there when that happened.
There's like two slow-mo shots that are kind of cool. But I mean, what the hell? That wasn't Max Payne. That was like something weird.
Did you see any of the promotional posters or like the movie posters for that movie? It was like Mark Wahlberg
staring at the ground sad.
Yeah,
like. Yeah, that's pretty much the movie. He's just staring like at past the camera, really sad looking, and then you're like,
so it's really more Max Mope.
Exactly. Max Mope. Some Mope. Yes.
Yeah.
I've also been playing some Counter-Strike Source, getting back into that because it's kind of something to be said for a game that uses only ballistics-based weapons. I feel like and that ragdoll is so good even today. It's so fun.
That was fun when I was playing with you guys the other night. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had a nice little match of friends and enemies, I guess. That was cool.
I don't know. Counter-Strike, I just can't get back into it anymore because it's so competitive. Like, unless you're bringing your entire team with you and it's guys that aren't like hardcore players, there's no point in playing. You just get absolutely destroyed.
It's true. Pretty much, yeah.
It's like jumping into a shark tank.
Sharks with AKs and they
can smell your blood and they have lasers attached to their foreheads. Anyway, laser sights.
Pretty much. And with that lovely image in our minds, that's the end of this week's podcast. If you'd like to submit questions for next week's, send us an MP3 at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can phone us at 1-877-404-1337 extension 724. We'd love to hear your questions. Thanks for the ones you guys submitted this week and last week. And likewise, if you'd like to subscribe to PC Gamer Magazine, head on over to gamesradar.com/PC. Take a look at the left side of the page for a subscription link. And in the 168-hour absence, I guess we'll see you guys next week. Take care. Thanks.